Vanetics with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. Part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org. This episode is titled Finding Oneself in the Mist of Personal Experience on a Fallen World and the Gift of Divine Administration. Here is Neon Emerson Chase.
In one of Jesus' teachings on prayer, he states, prayer does not change the divine attitude toward people, but it does change a person's attitude toward the changeless Father. The motive of the prayer gives it right of way to the divine ear, not the social, economic, or outward religious status of the one who prays. Jesus once told about two men who had come to the temple to pray. One was a highly respected and popular religious leader, and one was a very poor street person who lived in the margins of society and was considered trash and insignificant by those of the mainstream status quo. Jesus pointed out the motives and spiritual attitudes of the two men. The religious leader prayed something like, "Oh God, I'm so glad that I am not like that low-lifer next to me. Boy, am I glad that I'm where I am in my ascension. I have so much to offer others. And this guy over here, boy, he's in deep need of you." The poor street man prayed, "Oh God, please forgive me my error and my sin. I need you. And I want to be a better person than I am. And my life is a real mess right now. And I come to you for help. And I come to you for forgiveness and redemption. Thank you for listening to this unworthy servant." Jesus asked them, "Now which man is the more beautiful and worthy before God?" Of course, it's the poor street person with his humility and honesty and his grateful heart. The street man was poor in spirit. And remember, Jesus said, "Blessed and happy are those who are poor in spirit." The gifted, popular religious leader was not. He felt no desire to expand, and he had no need for redemption. He was already there and very complacent and proud in his static spirituality. It is our motives that celestial overcontrol looks at, not our successes in the world. For what may be successful to the eyes of the third dimension may be failure from a higher spiritized perspective. I'm going to be sharing some excerpts from my journals of 10 years ago that are actually a form of written conversational prayer. The first journal entry that I'm going to share with you, I wrote in April 21st, 1990. Gabriel and I were in Prescott, and the five people who had been living with us in community had left. We felt so alone. We practically were penniless. We had twin babies, and I was pregnant with Amadon. Most of my family and friends were not speaking to me, for they felt I was being deceived by a man possessed of evil spirits, or I was being taken for a ride by a charlatan. I was still grieving over the separation from my first three children and dealing with the hatred and vengefulness of their father and his wife. It seemed as if the people of Prescott were closed to us and to our ministry. And we felt abandoned and so alone, so very, very alone. And here is what I wrote. "Where do I go from here, my God? Our work makes so much sense to me and to Gabriel, but not to others. Even if some individuals believe for a time, they eventually walk away, whether it's a matter of day, weeks, or months. At this point in time and space, there is not one mortal who has in some way heard of us and our work who believes in us or stands by us. We are frauds or deceived or being used by dark forces. Not one believes in the validity of what's happening here. Why? What is wrong? And why then do I keep hanging on to my belief that our work is important and that the guides are real and are from God? In spite of my own doubts and perplexities about some of the things the guides say and do, why do I keep hanging on in stubbornness or perseverance to their realness? If it is because of my pride, then my hanging on is stubbornness, my pride preventing me to admit my error to myself and to others. I'm willing to look at that, Christ Michael, willing, as Gabriel is, to face the possibility that he and I have been deceived. He can't be called a fraud because a fraud knows he's being deceptive. A fraud's motive is to mislead people for money and or personal power. As Gabriel says, maybe he is living a lie. Maybe the guides aren't real, but just a creation of his own complex psyche. Maybe he has schizophrenic tendencies. I will look at this, Christ Michael. But even as I write these words, there is a confidence within me, a knowing that what Gabriel and I are experiencing is of God, and that the guides do exist as separate beings from Gabriel, that they truly are who they say they are, messengers from Christ Michael. In spite of all Gabriel's shortcomings, these beings are coming to us through him. And so at this time, I say that my hanging on is perseverance rather than stubbornness, though I do have pride and recognize that it would be extremely difficult to admit error to myself and others. But it is not my pride and stubbornness. It is my perseverance in my love for and faith in you, Christ Michael, that keeps me from denying the reality of what Gabriel and I have and are experiencing. No matter what happens, I know that Gabriel is no fraud, that his motives are for God, that the guides do exist regardless of others' disbelief. It is difficult for Gabriel. His gifts and abilities in cosmic and spiritual reality are much greater than mine, but on this plane at this time, they are not recognized. Though I have not yet found resolution to some of my intellectual and philosophical difficulties, I am achieving great victories, for I am ascending to the superhuman plane of moral understanding and spiritual insight. I am obtaining a vision of God as I progressively die to myself. With this vision comes a soul peace that passes all understanding. In spite of my fears for material survival, my emotional grief over the loss of old friends and family, and the turmoil within my psyche concerning some of the advice and information that the guides give us. I also don't understand why we have to go through so much struggle for material survival. In all of this conflict, I find that as my third dimensional foundations crumble beneath me, I continue to draw closer to God. I would much rather have this growing closeness to God than the financial security, the prestigious job, the respect from the community, the many friends and acquaintances, and the supposed control over my life that I had in the third dimension. In this pull to God, I have struggled within my heart between faith and doubt as each new issue or situation arises and one more layer of my third dimensional foundation crumbles. Through all these fluctuations between faith and doubt, I end up seeing the light of life, and my tortured soul ascends to new heights of hope and courage. Truly, I am no longer Nancy, but Neon. And Neon does not look for God in signs and miracles, for he has revealed himself throughout my life within my heart as a still small voice that says, I am here. Walk this way with me. Daily I see more and more a third-dimensional falsehoods about life and about God that the majority of people on this planet accept as truth. I have learned much these past 2.5 years with my Gabriel, and though I am not sure what I am going to do with this evolving enlightenment, I will not deny what I've experienced and learned. And I will listen to God's voice within me and however else He chooses to speak to me. I will be guided by Him, not by my own fears or misperceptions or falsities, and not by what others of third-dimensional thinking perceive. On May 3, 1990, I wrote, "We doubt the love, justice, and mercy of God when we view our situation from a third-dimensional perspective. We must climb out of our lower selves into our higher selves and look at all of this from a fourth-dimensional perspective. God will never interfere with the free will choice of any of His creatures, even those who are iniquitous, because of His love and mercy. He also will allow sin and iniquity to follow its full course so that all involved will have a chance to see the results of the evil and repent. So, this world continues, and many suffer as a result of others who choose evil. We also suffer because of our own errors and wrong decisions. But in these difficult times, I know that God is, and that He is just, loving, and merciful. I will trust in Him, and I will persevere with His help. I struggle with my fears about surviving financially when no income is coming in and no job prospects, though we're trying. I struggle with my fears and despair that maybe I've been duped and there is no end times, no change point, no divine new order. Maybe there are no guides, no past experiences, etc. But even as I write these words, in spite of my doubts, confusions, and fears, I know deep down that I have not been duped. That what I've experienced with the unseen counselors and teachers and friends is real and is of God. So amidst the clamoring of my lower self, the Spirit comes through in a quiet way and says very softly, "It's real. You are in God's hands, in His will. You are doing the work of God." Just as Christ Michael, when he was Jesus, was the most powerful in his choice to be in a seemingly helpless and victimized situation. When he was arrested, went through a trial, and was crucified, so you too can be a powerful force for me in your vulnerable state. Though you may not see the eternal value in what you're doing right now, it is there. With all of the letters you write, all of the people you contact through the written word or verbal communication, you are planting seeds of my truth. And as with Cocopelli, you may not see the harvest. Know that you have planted and that you are doing my work. Carry on, for I am with you. As Gabriel and I struggle inwardly and outwardly with our present situation, we draw closer to our Father in heaven. We become more courageous, more loyal, hopeful, faithful, and wiser. Though we do not know where we are going in our work or geographically where we may move, we are in God's hands, and all will work out for the highest good, for we love our Father in heaven and choose to be in His will. I feel so lost and confused right now. How can I deny what has happened since I met Gabriel? Yet at this point in time and space, I wonder if I made a mistake by leaving my old order of living. I guess this is the test. I've come up so many steps towards the divine new order. Am I ready to take the 110th step, which requires even more courage and faith? The Bright and Morning Star once said that many take so many steps upwards and then come to a point where they retreat. That's what happened with all of those of our cosmic family who were initially drawn to us. Some took only one or two steps with us, some 5 or 6, and some even went up to 20. But for all, there came a point, the moment of truth, the test that they chose not to pass and refused to take the next step, and they fled downwards in haste, leaving Gabriel and me to continue on. Now, too, I am hesitating at taking the next step, and there is a strong urge in my lower self to turn back, to go back into the comforting, much less challenging arms of tradition of the third dimension. There I had financial security, friends, respectability, and some sense of personal power. I also had complacency, dissatisfaction, restlessness, and an inner urging that called me to go beyond that reality, a knowingness that there was more, much more for me to experience, a sense of a mission, a destiny that I was not meeting. Now I falter, as Gabriel too is faltering. I cannot see clearly what is beyond the next step, though I have a vision of the beauty and wonder that is at the top of the stairs. There's no shortcuts to the top. I must take those steps one at a time. Each step requires some form of death to self so that rebirth and the self of personality can happen. Each step requires some degree of faith and courage. I've taken them before, and I can take the next step again. On page 1722 of the Urantia book, we're told that Jesus fully understood how difficult it is for people to break with their past. He knew how human beings are swayed by the preacher's eloquence and how the conscience responds to emotional appeal as the mind does to logic and reason. But he also knew how far more difficult it is to persuade people to disown the past. Gabriel and I were asked to disown the past that was steeped in third-dimensional perceptions and shallow values. We were asked to move beyond our own beautiful traditional Christian religious beliefs into expanded epical revelation. We were asked to disown all of the past that would keep us from moving into our destiny within the mandate of the bright and morning star. And as you can see from those excerpts of my personal journal, I too went through what many of you are presently going through right now. Each of you must take one step at a time into the future of a divine new order, a dimension of understanding and behaving that is foreign to the third dimensional mind. And that's why often we may seem a little crazy or insane to some people who have the third dimensional mind. And that's why, especially Gabriel, so many people can't understand him because he's way up there on a much, much higher step. I want to close with something that André Gide, he said this: one does not discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore for a very long time. What do you need to lose sight of that's on the shore and you're still straining to see it? What do you need to disown in order to take your next step upwards into divine administration, understanding? Thank you, and I look forward to walking up those steps with you for the many, many years to come. And it was pretty emotional for me to read some of these because I can remember how we felt. And now the reality here is so beyond what we thought was going to happen at that moment in our time of despair. And yet, our celestial friends had told us that this would happen. And they've told us so much more, too, that's going to happen. And I think that we always need to remember those visions when we're fluctuating between our insanity and our stability and our little temporary neuroses and fears. And remember, too, that the Urantia book says that our thought adjuster, our personal fragment of the Father, can help us shift out of a mind of fear and concern and anxieties and worry. Because we can't do much about the future. We can only do what's in the moment. And what we do in the moment will determine the future. Remember that. Thank you.
Vanetics with Gabriel of Urantia and Neon Emerson Chase, an ongoing series of lectures and teachings on spiritual leadership, personal change, and the principles of divine administration. part of the curriculum of the University of Ascension Science and the Physics of Rebellion. More information can be found at uaspr.org.